Ready, Set, Pod. Hello and welcome everybody to the finale of the Great British Bake Off. I'm here. I'm Haley Strong. I'm here to redeem myself in a tower of sweets after a long season of bumbling around the podcasting studio. My competition today, Kurt Clark. Hey, what's up?
Yeah. There's no tower tall enough for me to redeem myself, so I'll leave that to you. I count me out.
And our inevitable winner is also here, Emily Fox, the most competent person we've ever met.
That's a really kind compliment. I like that.
It's true. Like, Kurt and I just like mumble around, like, oh, we're here. And Emily's like, listen, I bake bread and I know exactly what I'm going to say about Peter.
I'm going to proof the croissants on the bed behind me, just to lord it over you.
I read articles about the show, so I know what I'm talking about when I come to it.
We can't hate Peter anymore because he won, so now we're directing it all towards Emily.
It's fine.
We love Emily.
Yeah, I love you guys. This has been such a fun sort of derivation from Top Chef. And, you know, I love Great British Bake Off for a multitude of reasons, but actually being able to talk about it every week rather than just sitting there and kind of stewing and however I feel about it has been a really great outlet for me.
I can't believe it's been 2.5 months since we started this. Like, it really feels like we just picked up yesterday.
Mm-hmm. It really does. Yeah.
Kurt, tell me how you felt. So you've watched one whole season of Great British Bake Off coming into this. It was series 5. How was your first experience watching it week by week? What do you think? Are you a Great British Bake Off super fan? Are you going to go back and watch every season?
I am. Well, I'd say I'm a fan. I don't think I'm quite a super fan yet. But I do plan on going back and watching every season. I think I started because I went back to the, Bake Off the Beginnings. There's the Netflix one where it actually covers episodes, the seasons 2 and 3, I believe. And I had to stop after like partway through the first episode because it was like getting too jumbled in my head between what's going on in series 2 and what's going on in the current series 11. So now that series 11 / season 8 is over, I'm looking forward to going back and watching the ones I've missed. I do plan on doing that. Although I have a feeling I'm going to be like, oh no, we have to say bye to Mel and Sue. Like, oh no, we have to say goodbye to Mary. You know, I know at least that stuff is coming. And I've been getting little spoilers here and there in terms of some seasons. But I am looking forward to watching the rest of it. And I thank you, Haley, for introducing me to this and for inviting me along in the journey.
I feel like I forced you into this. But like, I was like, no, Kurt, you're going to like this because you had mentioned, like, you don't always love the cooking shows that don't have a competition element. I'm like, great. Great British Bake Off has a competition element. Yeah. I'm like, well, it's pretty soft. I'm like, yes, it is. Come on, Kurt.
Exactly what you need. Yeah. Yeah.
No, I took my medicine and it was tasty.
With a spoonful of sugar.
Yeah. Yes. Literally. Lots of sugar. Lots of mango.
Passion fruit.
Of passion fruit. So the way medicine should be.
Yes. And Emily, as somebody who's presumably seen every season as of I think I've missed season 1, but you know,
I have too, actually. I keep trying to like go back through my brain and being like, have I seen all of them? I think I have. I don't know. I might do a deep dive again anyway, just because that's what we do just, when we have nothing else to do.
It just feels like joy.
Yeah, it does feel like joy.
Where would you rank this in your, you know, all of the seasons together?
So this is interesting for me because obviously this was not filmed the same way that previous seasons have been. I think we kind of entered into a weird time for all of us historically. And I think it is slightly reflected in this past series. That being said, I really loved a lot of the people that were on this, but I don't think I can pick a particular series where I wouldn't love everybody because I think they do a really good job of bringing in a lot of really competent, excellent bakers, people that you love, people that maybe you feel like, oh, why are they on here? But they're doing great stuff anyway. Or sometimes they're not doing great stuff. But that's also the nature of how this works. That being said, not my most favorite season. It felt, I think, as we had sort of walked our way through a lot of these episodes, that some of the challenges felt a little contrived or a little too nailed it. That being said, still had a good time. I mean, I'm never not going to love this show. I think it's just built in a way that makes me smile, that inspires me to bake. And I love the rotating cast of characters. I always will, I think.
Did with both of your respective experiences with previous seasons, did you get the sense that the producers, knowing that this was going to be kind of simulcast on Netflix in the US, did they adjust the show at all to be reflective of the fact there was going to be a sort of live US contingent of potentially new watchers now, do you think? Or was this pretty, because this felt very different to me than series five did, in terms of maybe it was the bakes, maybe it was the hosts, not the judges so much. But there was, I noticed a sharp difference between this and series five. And I didn't know if that was just an evolution of the show.
Yeah.
Or if there were things that were substantively different.
I think it's a combination. I don't really think they're taking Americans watching it into consideration. I think it's an evolution of a show, which we see in almost all reality shows we watch. Okay. And I think it's the move to Channel 4 instead of BBC. Mm-hmm. Channel 4 is a little more heavy-handed, maybe, in their shows. Their shows feel much more typical to what we're used to watching, where BBC is much more of like a learning experience, I feel like. So when we made the move to Channel 4, we also lost like the segments of like history and stuff like that that we really saw in those early seasons that felt very BBC. And coming into Channel 4, we have a lot more challenges where things can go wrong. I think one of the complaints I've heard from British people is that it does feel more pushed and like you said, contrived. It did feel like some of the challenges this season were setting people up to fail. Mm-hmm.
Definitely.
And I hope that the producers of the show will maybe look at it and realize that what they have on their hands is gold, and there's no point in changing it that much. An example for me is Taskmaster, which is a show I really love. Kurt, I've made you watch it. Emily, Josh hates British people, so like he can't.
We've watched
it.
A couple of episodes. Actually, to be fair, he doesn't hate British people; he just doesn't understand them. I'm like, how is it that hard? I don't. If you can go to Boston and hang out with my family for a couple of days, I think you can handle a British accent. They're pretty much like their own thing, but like it's not that hard to hear. I don't know.
Yeah.
For me, it doesn't make sense, but sorry.
No problem. And so Taskmaster spent 9 seasons on this channel called Dave, which is a very small channel. They do a lot of their own stuff, and it recently moved to Channel 4 as well. And I think that they've tried really hard to make the show Taskmaster what it always has been. And I think that Channel 4 would be smart to just keep on keeping on with Great British Bake Off the way it has been, instead of pushing all of these elements that don't always work, because the show carries itself. Like, people watch it because of what it is. I don't need bust cakes.
Yeah,
it's not what I'm here for. I will say I love the Showstopper challenge this week. This is exactly what I want. Mm-hmm. From a showstopper, it's exactly what I want in a finale challenge, because I felt like last season, the finale challenge, like the finale showstopper, was a little like finicky, where like mm-hmm. this really made sense to me. I think changing the host had a part to do with it. That's no fault of theirs. Sandy left. They had to. I think they did the best they could with the weird circumstances. It's just not how the show is filmed. Like, they film every weekend. They get to go home to their families. And that was not the case this season. And you could kind of feel that. And I don't think if this bubble wasn't necessary, they would choose to do this in the future.
Yeah, I agree. I think probably it's a combination of manufactured or engineered drama because of switching channels, because of the heightened sense of quarantine and having to have everybody together in one place. I mean, even with the finale and having like the workers come and be the crowd. And I was like, we're all standing a little close together, aren't we? Like, usually everyone's on like a picnic blanket having a great time, and everyone was like clustered to make it into one shot. And I was like, I don't know if I even feel better about this. I'd rather see everybody actually relax and see who wins, because that's usually the timbre of like how this sort of works out. So yeah, you lose a little of the luster, I think, from the early series finales. But yeah, it's a weird time. I don't think there could have been much else that anyone could have done.
Except put an AC in the tent.
Yeah. I mean, we could talk about that all day. But yeah, I think it's just been, it's a weird time.
It's a weird time, but it did, it felt like the comforting warm hug that I come to Bake Off for.
Correct.
I don't think the season ended how any of us may have wanted or expected. But I feel like pleased with it. So congrats to Peter for winning. Yeah. Every week we're like, Peter!
Yeah.
I'd say I half expected it, but I was
I was like 100%. Well, I'm like, of course Peter's gonna win. Yeah. Like, of course.
There was part of me that was surprised that Dave did not. I mean, we can get to that later. But it'll be interesting to see a new, you know, knock on wood, non-COVID series with kind of the same structure, like in terms of how do Noel and Matt engage, you know, how do, you know, just overall, just for me, in terms of not having seen like this whole contingent of people before. And obviously Matt's new to everybody, but it'll be like the crowd shot. Like, I was trying to look to see if there were former contestants there, because I thought that they had said that there were, like in the voiceover, and I didn't see, like, if there had been, you think they would have zoomed in on a couple familiar faces. So I guess there weren't.
I think they said, you know, typically, historically, we do have the old cast members come, because that's what they do. I wonder if they were like, get out of here, the fewer people we have, the better.
Yeah.
And that's just how this shook out, especially, you know, who's going to hang around necessarily when there is all of this happening personally. Like, I would probably be like, okay, I need to get home now. I've been gone for like 6 weeks straight or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't know. The whole thing just felt really weird, but it's sort of indicative of the larger issue that's going on right now. So I can't fault them too much for it. But yeah, I think it didn't have the same sort of joyful ending that I typically feel with this. And it's not because of Peter. Like, I think it was just the whole environment around.
How wonderful would it have been? I'm going to tear up. Like, the finales always get me. How wonderful would it have been for Peter, who was obviously very close to his family, for them to be there and see him win? Because it's very obvious that Bake Off has been like a family thing for them,
totally,
where they all get together and sit in front of the TV. Like, how wonderful would it have been for him to live out his dream in front of his family and his parents and people who he's close to? Like, that would have just been so satisfying and lovely. And I think Peter is a lovely winner. I think he really just handled this season with grace, and anytime he stumbled, he picked himself back up, brushed his shoulders off, and, you know, did great the next week. And I absolutely believe that this was the closest call for them in Bake Off history between Peter and Dave.
Yeah, and I appreciate that they didn't try to do the, you know, it could be Laura.
You know, they were like, we can't lie.
No, like, they had that final deliberation, and they're like, yeah, it's pretty much between, you know, Dave and Peter. I'm glad they didn't try to fool us with the editing. We all knew it. Laura knew it. I think I was, you know, I was feeling for Laura a lot this episode. But there was, after the technical, I was like, it's not going to likely happen. But
it felt like after the signature.
Yeah, I was going to say the signature started off poorly for her. So I think it was pretty early on that everyone was like, yeah, it's been a good run for you. But like sit back and let the boys do the work.
Well, yeah, when Dave and Peter did not completely botch the technical, that's when I knew that like she was like that was her only chance was if they. Yeah. For her to come first in the technical and for them to lose the technical by a mile. But I was glad that she went into the third challenge, the showstopper, with kind of this mentality of, it felt like she knew that she was out of the running and that freed her up to relax a lot more. And it was nice to see that.
I mean, I would have loved for her to relax a little bit more with a bunch of these challenges throughout the series, because think that makes a world of difference in terms of how you perform just generally, right? I think everyone can remember times where they've been so nervous that they've just completely self-sabotaged something, right? Ooh,
every day of my life.
Right? But the times in which, like, you know, you have a little bit of nerves, but you're like, I'm just going to do this because it's a great opportunity, like, easier said than done, of course. But I think that, you know, even Paul is like, are you going to keep, like, a cleaner workspace? Like, you got this. Just, like, take it easy. And I think even that, she was like, yeah, you're right, you know? But I think most of us can say without a doubt that we are our own worst critics. So I feel for her. I understand her plight in a lot of these challenges, but I also, it was nice to see her relax, I think, for the final showstopper because she put together a pretty good product.
And there is nothing I want more than Noel Fielding to talk me off the ledge. Like, I love the way he, he was handling the situation. He was like, hey, you know, just think about the next one. Don't worry about this one. You're good. Just look ahead. Keep looking ahead. And, you know, I think she really took that to heart.
Noel really did. I did not get the sense that Noel was rooting for Peter at any point during this competition. And I know he's supposed to be impartial. And I'm sure a lot of it was tongue in cheek. But it's like just as he's like bending down to like extend a hand to Laura and pull her back up in the ledge, he's purposefully like accidentally bumping Peter off the ledge. I mean, in terms of just the things he's saying. So, but I mean, it was kind of like kidding, not kidding, but kidding. But am I kidding?
Something I would have loved, I liked to picture, is Emily in the bake-off tent working on her showstopper, the biggest thing of her life, and Noel Fielding coming over and asking her to kiss a wooden spoon. I can only imagine you would take it from his hand and hit him with it, maybe, or just throw it across the room.
Yeah,
I would be like, I have no time for this nonsense, Noel.
I said this to Josh a couple of weeks ago because we were trying to get onto the highway, and it was like in this really rural part of upstate New York, and it looked like it was the wrong way sign, but it wasn't. And I was like, no, this is the only way to get onto the highway. And he was like, I don't know. I think you're going there. And I had to like stop and do a U-turn instead because like he kind of made me falter last minute and he was cracking up. And I was like, this isn't funny. I'm not here to play right now. And he was like, what a classic Emily Fox thing to say. And he laughed so hard. And I was like, yeah, I even have to laugh at that because what a burst of like anger and energy that came out of me just because I like flubbed this turn and there was like nobody behind me because I was on like this dark country road. But like, I think that that's probably what would come out of me in terms of like a wooden spoon interaction where I'd be like, get out of here. I didn't come here to play. I'm trying to get this done. But yeah,
I often
to each other like three more times since this happened like 2 weeks ago.
That story absolutely checks out for me. In the best possible way, though. Like, I'm like, yeah, that makes sense.
Nah, I'm serious about this stuff. I think I take myself probably way too seriously when it comes to certain things. Because I am my own worst critic, as I said before. But I think there is a level of, like, really intense precision that's required, especially for a showstopper. And
focus. And you have a list of things you need to get done and you have to get it done within a certain time. Like there's no room for error. There's no room to redo things.
Yeah.
There's no time for spoon kissing.
That's why, like, whenever I see in Top Chef where they're like, how many minutes left? And there's always like one of the contestants that's like 7 minutes or something like that. And I'm like, in what world did a producer go up and approach that person and be like, hey, I know you're like really in the thick of it right now, but like, do you think you could like kindly remind everybody that there's like 10 minutes left on the clock? Like, I would be like, get out of here. I'm never going to be your person for that. Like, I have too much shit to do. Sorry.
So let's actually get into these challenges. For the signature, they needed to make 8 beautifully decorated custard slices. Laura made a yuzu custard slice. Dave made a caramel latte custard slice. And Peter made a cranachan custard slice. I'm going to be honest here. I don't know what a cranachan is. Let's do a quick goog. Cranachan. The Brits are like, we hate you for this reason. Oh, it's a Scottish dessert.
Which makes sense because he's the first Scot to have ever won.
Good for him.
Yeah.
Oh, a celebration of harvest. Raspberry harvest in June.
Looks lovely. Like a trifle. It looks
like
a trifle. That
sounds really nice, actually.
I know. I would eat this.
I'm in. Mm. I would, now knowing what that is, that's probably what I would reach for. I bet the caramel latte is tasty, but I don't always go for the coffee flavored things.
Yeah.
And poor Laura is just, I felt so bad watching that happen to her.
I didn't though. Cause I was like, I'm done doing this.
Yeah,
I'm
that's so fair. Bad. That's fair. That's fair.
Which like is bad. I feel like I should have had more patience, but I was also like, oh, Laura, like I know, we know this isn't going to work out and it sucks. And I hate it. Big, and I kind of just wish we could just jump to the technical because, like, this makes me sad.
the moment that Paul said, you know, the more liquid you put in, the more, like, types of liquid you put in there, the harder it is going to be for it to set. And then you cut to Laura, you know, dumping
it all.
two-handing it in terms of, like, adding stuff. You knew that this was not going to turn out well. And this is one of the things where if they'd had time off between, she had to have practiced this. And so she had to have known how difficult it was to set, which makes me wonder when they get the direction for what the showstoppers and signatures are going to be, do you're going to have this much time to do it. So make sure that whatever you practice, you can get that time. So I don't know if they give them the time ahead of time. You'd think that they would, but a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes. I don't know how she thought this would set nicely if she'd had time to practice it.
One of my favorite parts was when the judges were like, did you add gelatin? She was like, 10 sheets. And Prue was like, this should be hard as a rock. Like, ooh.
Yeah, exactly. Give it like 10 more minutes. Let's see what happens.
I was having flashbacks to last week's cube cake with the gelatin sheets where it was like the mousse was more of a rubber sponge or something. Then I was like, oh no, it's not going to be like that again. But no, it wasn't. But it was also the very opposite problem.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it was unfortunate. I mean, I think that probably would have been my favorite flavor. I love yuzu everything. I've been known to buy very expensive yuzu juice at the Japanese market nearby. So I think that would have been, I mean, I'm sure it was delicious. Paul even said, you know, this tastes really great. It just didn't set. It's a kind of mess, blah, 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 blah. I think Peter's probably would have been my second favorite, but I also am allergic to oats because of course I am. So like, I don't want to stay away from
that. What do you mean you're allergic to oats?
It's the same thing as eggs. So it's just like an intolerance that I have. My mom has it too. It's super fun. Highly underreported.
have we tried duck oats?
Now we're on to something.
Look into that.
If that's the only grain I have a problem with, I'm not that upset about it. So
I would have gone for Dave's. The caramel coffee combination, I think, would trump the raspberry whiskey combination for me.
Those feel like Kurt flavors to me.
Yeah. And it doesn't, I know he wasn't able to get the hazelnut spikes on there. I wasn't sure if there was another kind of hazelnut element in the bake.
Sure,
and if there was, Even better. So yeah, that would have been more my speed, and Laura's would have been at the bottom for me in terms of desire between the lemon, the coconuts, the yuzu, the fact that it was a soup and not a custard. But yeah, that's the thing. I would have gone, you know, Dave, Peter, Laura. Mm-hmm.
The technical challenge. Boy, did I want to eat these 8 little walnut whirls. Sign me up for that.
The way you just said it. These little walnut whirls.
Walnut whirls. Like, how can you not? Like, they had to make 8 little walnut whirls for their technical
challenge. That sounds like a regional, like, carnival ride that you would.
The walnut whirl.
Yeah, the walnut whirl.
Walnut whirls, what they called me in high school. If you don't know what a walnut whirl is, as we, I'm sure all of us did not, walnut sable biscuit base coffee ganache filling surrounded by marshmallow and coated in tempered chocolate. Like, these looked, sounded delicious. Like, I want this. Put them in my pocket and call it a day.
Yeah, this kind of reminds me of like a Malabar, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess I never really considered homemade marshmallow. Yeah. And I liked looking at the process of it.
It looked better to me than I think I was more excited to be like, oh, that's really cool that you made that. That looks really neat. I'll pass. Because the marshmallow, not a big turn on for me. I don't think I would have tried one, but I wasn't like, oh, get these in my mouth. It's not a big
somebody cut that for me, please. Get these in my mouth.
So yeah, I would have been like, you know what, Haley, you can have first dibs. Go for it.
I want first, second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, and eighth dibs. Thank you.
Oh, there's not enough for me. That's okay.
I thought Laura's looked better than Peter, so I was surprised that she ended up in the bottom here.
I was too.
They were like, we just need a reason.
I think so. Dave's were beautiful. I mean, I get annoyed when they're like, well, the chocolate didn't set. I'm like, great, you gave them 1 hour and it's 85 degrees. Like, what do you want from them?
Yeah, I get really annoyed at that too, where it's like, oh, it just would have been better if it set or it had a little more time.
It would have been great if they did it in their own kitchen with air conditioning. Yeah, right. No, yeah. Totally.
Yeah.
Although there's not a lot of aircon in the UK, so we've heard.
Yeah. Mm. One of the things I'm looking forward to in the new series is it not being filmed in the middle of summer, potentially.
Yeah.
Or at least if it is, for them to take into account the, you know, the nearly triple digit temperatures.
No, they never take it into account. They just, it doesn't happen as frequently.
Right. So I got to look up what tempered chocolate means. It's something, it's a phrase I've always heard, but I never actually knew it. One plus of watching this with my mom is she would ask me questions the entire time. And I have to, like, what is tempered chocolate? And, like, normally I'd just be watching and be like, tempered chocolate, I take it for what it is and I keep watching. But I'd pause it, I'd look it up, I go, oh, this is, it's, you know, it's how you treat chocolate in order for it to be kind of used in the candy form, blah, 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 blah. And so I learned a lot more, actually, in this episode in having, watching it alongside one of my parents.
Do you ever temper chocolate, Emily?
Yeah.
Oh. Okay.
I mean, the funny thing is, like, I was legitimately like half expecting, like, oh, is she going to be asking me this question? And then I look at Haley's face was like,
love you, Kurt, but I'm not asking if you temper chocolate.
I was like, I was getting prepared to like stick with an answer and to say why I don't, which because I don't do anything.
Oh my God.
But yeah, but then I was like, no, she's asking him.
Yeah. Sorry, Kurt. Love you. I know that's probably not something you're doing on a Tuesday afternoon like Emily is.
Like, for me, it's more like, do you put the alcohol and then the mixer or the mixer and then the alcohol? That's more of my speed of question.
I go alcohol and then mixer.
Yeah, same.
Then it gives the, you know what? When I make coffee for people at work, this is what I do. There's a couple of regulars that I don't even bother bringing in the creamer milk. I just make it myself because I know what they like. I'll always put the creamer or milk in the cup first and then pour the coffee in because then it gives it a chance to like mix up.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Does that make any sense?
Yep. No, that's the same way the alcohol is going to like, it's going to be lighter than the liquid that's going to rise. Yeah, no,
For the $50 million, one of the scientists is going to comment and be like, Haley, you know, that's not how like liquids will separate sometimes, right? Like alcohol is heavier, so it'll stay at the, I don't know.
Are you talking about viscosity?
I'm never talking about viscosity.
I'm talking about relative density.
Yeah.
People have been saying I'm relatively dense for a while now.
No, compared to Emily, you and I are relatively dense, Haley.
Here's the thing.
I love coming to this podcast and feeling like a moron every week. How did I trick anyone in letting me be on this when obviously I'm an idiot?
No, you're not.
Well, I am.
No,
I have other skills.
Can I say why I put the alcohol in first?
Of course.
Because I like it to be in the ice and cool down a little bit. Because my alcohol is room temp for the most part.
Yeah.
That's why I do that first. And then I add all the other things. And it feels like it's easier to mix that way. And that way you don't end up with like a whole mouthful of alcohol first.
Yeah.
Which is never the worst thing. But maybe if you're putting mixers in, you want it to taste a little more balanced.
Emily, I don't know if I know this about you. What's your favorite cocktail?
Oh, that's a
good
question.
Like, if you're going to a bar and you can only order one cocktail, what are you getting?
I usually
prepare your answer for this as well.
This one, I can see potentially coming my way. So I'm
okay. I oscillate between doing like a mezcal tequila type drink, or I do a whiskey drink. I really love bourbon.
What about a vodka drink? A cider drink? A lager drink? Do you sing the songs that remind you of the good times, or do you sing the songs that remind you of the best times?
Listen, I'm going to get knocked down for this answer, but...
But you'll get up again.
Yeah, you will.
I always do.
It's never going to get you down.
God, I used to babysit a kid who loved that song, and we just listened to it for hours. So I usually oscillate between those two spirits just because I really love them very, very much. And any sort of citrus component that goes with it. So I will typically, like last night, I made myself a whiskey sour, minus the egg white, obviously. And then I will make usually like a really good margarita or mezcal-ish drink with lime, I think is delicious and usually my go-to. But every once in a while I do a vodka. Like there's a place that we love called Long Island Bar that's pretty close to where we live. I would recommend checking them out to the extent that you can. They make probably the best gimlet I've ever had in my entire life. They have like a ginger...
Is that what you pull out of the turkey?
Yes. A package of gimlets that you could sort of reduce into a stock. No. So I get a gimlet from them, which is super delicious. It has like a ginger syrup, like simple syrup. Ooh. That they use. So like it gives it like a little extra like kick and a lot of lime to it. And like you can barely taste the alcohol. So I can throw with like two of those back. And then all of a sudden I stand up and I'm like, I am drunk. This is a problem. But yeah, those are typically my drinks. That's usually what I gravitate towards naturally. Kurt.
I will tend to gravitate towards things I've never had before. Mm-hmm. I try to find something that sounds unique and interesting. I think of them as concoctions rather than cocktails. Like, I wouldn't have thought of that combination of things. They tend to be on the sweet side. They tend to have embarrassing names. I've been to a few bars where they partition off their cocktail menu by the main type of liquor that adds space. I tend to go towards rum. And so I'll tend to go towards I often will find myself going into tiki drink land in terms of rums and juices and kind of sugary sweet. But I can't go wrong with a good dark and stormy. So a rum and ginger beer.
I love dark and stormies.
Yeah. But throw in a little bit of fruit juice into that as well, beyond some lime. And I think I would be good. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you know, I tend to like, that's a concoction or a combination of flavors I've never seen on any other menu. I'll likely go for that.
Mm-hmm. Haley, what about you?
If I'm going out, I really only order three types of alcohol. That's white wine. I call the Haley Strong Holy Trinity a glass of Coke.
Do you ever
white wine and a water?
Do you ever order a double white wine?
Like a wine for each hand?
So every wedding I've ever been to in like maybe the last like 8 or 10 years, I just go to the bartender. I say, I'll have a double white wine. So that they pour it all the way up. And
that's fair. Yeah, okay.
I believe on Top Chef, Chef Casey described that as a country club pour.
Mm. Yeah, I love that.
Yeah.
I will also order a margarita if I know mm-hmm. that it's not how I make margaritas at home, which mm-hmm. oftentimes is the lazy man's margarita. Mott's margarita mix, tequila.
Yeah.
Call it a day.
Okay. Blended ice or blended or on the rocks?
On the rocks. I never get a blended margarita.
Yeah. I can't do frozen drinks. They hurt my teeth.
Emily, competent. Her teeth, not.
Not so great. Yeah. Very delicate little teeth I have.
I do love a Moscow Mule.
Oh, so yeah. good. That's what I wanted to say. After you said dark and stormy, I was like, Moscow Mule, Moscow Mule.
Yeah, I love ginger beer, and I love how spicy. I'm very into ginger lately.
Yeah.
I got these ginger candies that I just like to chew on. They're tasty.
The one bottle of alcohol in the house I'm in right now is a bottle of ginger liqueur.
Oh.
I've been like mixing it with root beer all week.
I was going to say, like, what do you make with that? Yeah. I feel like that would be like a good thing to dip like lady fingers into and like make some sort of like tiramisu adjacent dish.
Hmm.
Right?
It's a cool looking bottle too. I'll send a picture to you guys later.
Sounds good.
Anyways, the show stopped.
Yes.
Now I just want a cocktail. This is like weird.
Is there because I know there's all sorts of. There's obviously you've got Nailed It. You've got things on Netflix like, you know, Sugar Rush and like dessert focused things. We've had Top Chef Just Desserts. Has there been, we've seen on Top Chef them have to make cocktails to go with dishes. Have we seen a mixology focused, apologies if I'm like too much into like the 2000s and not the 2010s or 20s with the mixology as a term, but have we ever seen a mixology cocktail crafting reality show?
I don't think so, because I feel like the judges would get bombed by like the death cocktail.
But there's an edibles cannabis cooking challenge on Netflix. So you think you'd have the same issue there. I haven't watched it yet. I don't think I have, unless I watched it and forgot.
Unless you were partaking in edibles and then watched it, yeah.
So
there
I'd
used
be interested
to be a show on Cooking Channel that I'm remembering. I just looked it up to see. It's called Drinks with Allie in Georgia.
Oh, and Georgia from My Favorite Murder, the podcast.
Yes, I believe that's correct.
Because I think that could be a fun show, but yeah, you'd have to.
Allie Ward and Georgia Hardstark.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. So they used to have a show that is still online. If you guys want to check it out, they have a tiramisu and a lemon meringue pie cocktail and a grill your peaches cocktail. They're all showing up as food cocktails.
Ooh,
and they call it
a challenge. It sounds good.
Is it a challenge competition show?
No, I think it's like a.
It's just like a here's what we're making. Honestly, it looks interesting based on the fact that we're talking about desserts right now. But yeah, I always used to see them in like little blurbs and commercials, but I never saw the show actually play out. And this is probably like 8 or 9 years old at this point. Yeah. That's the closest I've seen, but nothing competition wise.
I think you raise a good point. Is like the judging of it would be, how do we work this?
I mean, you could do like one of the straw tastes that bartenders take when they make something, right? But that's, I don't know if that's like the same sort of mouthfeel and enjoyment of a cocktail that you probably want to convey to somebody.
Right. Like, can you taste cocktails like you taste wine in terms of not actually consuming it?
Get me the spittoon, baby.
Oh, God.
Nothing but the spit takes.
As somebody who has worked in wine and wine events for a while, I will say I'll do pretty much any job on an event site. I will not empty spittoons.
Oh, yeah. They're gross.
What?
Yeah.
No. Anyway, the showstopper is Colossal Dessert Tower, reflecting on your own personal experience. I loved this. This is exactly what I want from a finale, which is like taking everything you've learned and making it into something at the end. I feel like maybe I called this last week. Is this what I said I wanted to see in a showstopper? Was like a mixture of a bunch of desserts? Yeah.
You did.
Mm-hmm. I'm not just a mediocre face, folks.
Stop it. You're crazy.
I like to tell that joke at work, and patrons don't always know, like, if what's an actual joke. Yeah. I'm like, folks, I'm joking. Come on now. A rainbow dessert tower was made by Laura. She made it with Chelsea buns, orange and cinnamon, cream cheese frosting, key lime tart, and lemon curd filling. Those key lime tarts were beautiful and probably one of the most beautiful things she's made this season. Mm-hmm. I think maybe she had issues in construction. I think she maybe thought of what she wanted to make before thinking about how it's going to go together.
Mound in a tower.
Yeah, because she tried to like put the tarts on top of like the Chelsea buns, and then so the Chelsea buns weren't always like perfectly uniform, so that the, you know, they wouldn't sit nicely, and those tarts were so beautiful, and to not have them sit perfectly, like, I don't know. But I mean, Laura, I love you. We knew coming into this, it was just like, bake for fun, Laura. Have a great time.
Yeah.
Peter made a bonkers baking show bubble cake with chocolate and orange Battenberg biscuits, a lemon and blackberry crème diplomate, fresh strawberries and cream. And of course, we can't have a Peter showstopper without some Christmas fun, a Christmas spice friand.
I'm reading that as France.
France. Christmas spice France. I will say, I didn't find Peter's as striking as Dave's,
right.
Especially that top layer. It felt a little haphazard to me. Mm-hmm. I did love the idea of making like a Battenberg looking biscuit to really kind of pull in what they had made in the past.
Yeah, I think I was a little nervous for him just based on the fact that like we rarely see him falter at all. And when he does, he's usually like, oh, it's fine. I'll just like pivot and do this. But this you could tell he was pretty nervous about, especially after he'd like sort of cut everything Battenberg style and then was like, ooh, that's not the design I was looking for right away. But then he obviously did a good job. But I agree with you that Dave's, I think, looked a little bit more sound in its construction and tastier. But you know, Peter got the height in, you know.
I was impressed with Peter's, but I wasn't as impressed with Peter's as I was with Dave's. Dave's was the tower to redemption. I love the idea of him taking all of the things he maybe didn't do as well throughout the season and coming back and being like, I can make brownies. I can make this. I can make that. Look at my babka. So it was a with raspberry cream patisseries, brownies, fresh strawberry and creme, mousseline filling, and chocolate babkas. I love the idea. I loved the way it looked. I think I would really like everything that was in this, too.
Yeah. I think this sounds the tastiest to me.
This bake was what surprised me. Actually, coming out of this bake, I was surprised that Dave didn't end up winning. I thought this was the more ambitious. I thought the approach of redemption was an interesting one and one that the judges would appreciate. But perhaps, do we think they loved the entire thing except for that bun at the top? That was a little bit tough, I think, and just because it was so close, if that had been, even some of the things that they said about, you know.
But they didn't like something on Peter's, too. Like, I don't think they liked the friands.
Mm-hmm.
That's true. But I'm wondering if Dave had come
something
out
else, yeah.
come up with or made that one element to their liking, if that would have put him on top. Because but I was definitely more impressed with Dave's and the bonkers. I couldn't get past Peter's name. I'm sorry, the bonkers bubble cake. I was like,
How childish.
It's like he's only 20.
Oh my goodness. That's age shame the winner.
He asked for it. Yeah, I agree. It was funny because on Thanksgiving night, Josh kind of looked at me deviously and was like, I know who wins. And I was like, oh, come on. And I was like, it's going to be Peter, right? And he looked at me and was like, So of course, the next morning, first thing, I kind of woke up and totally turned this on. And there was a moment where I was like, all right, Dave, are we going to steal this? You know, do you have a better shot? And then Prue being like, oh, this still needs work. And you being like, all right, it's probably Peter, but maybe it's Dave. It's probably Peter. It's Peter.
So was Josh spoiled on it then from like the Tuesday?
Yeah, he was.
Okay.
No,
okay. Yeah. He just lorded that over you for like few days.
He did. I mean, it's not a big deal. It's fine. I found out 12 hours later, but like, it was pretty funny. I was like, wait a second. Is it Peter? It's definitely Peter. And then he was like, but yeah, I'm not surprised. I'm happy for him. I think Dave put in a really good effort considering.
This was the most fun I've seen Dave have, it felt like. He was just like exuberant almost. Yeah. He was just happy to be there. He was having a good time. He was believing in what he was doing. And I think he was just really happy for Peter.
Yeah. And he had a really strong theme. I loved that he was like, I'm definitely going back and rebaking all of these things that I sort of stumbled with or had difficulty with over the episodes. So
and his babkas were like round muffin shaped, weren't they? But they were.
Yeah, they're like mini. It was cute.
Yeah, little guys.
Yeah, I wanted each and every one of them. You can have all those walnut whorls.
Have the babkas.
I have the babkas.
Well, you got to temper that chocolate to put them in there. So.
Oh, I'll have to start doing that.
As everyone's like, Emily, stop making tempered chocolate jokes. Get out of here. But yeah, I thought it was a good showstopper. I was impressed by everybody.
Did anyone else cry in the Where Are They Now segment?
Of course.
I cried the whole time.
100%.
I was like trying not to like, I can't help it. I just cry. Bake Off makes me cry every time.
Same.
I like how they included I've only seen the one series. They included little snippets of them meeting up with each other outside of the, it wasn't just a Where Are They Now, but look, Lottie's visiting Mark and, you know, and what have you. And you, but I was saddened to see that Lewis from series 5 had passed.
Yeah.
So I was like, the one series I've watched, I was like, I know this guy. So that was kind of sad.
Yeah.
But I forgot that they do the, because I remember they did that on series 5 as well, was the Where Are They Now sort of thing. And I believe they did. And that was fun to see. I do wish, I like that we got to see Peter's speaker phone call with his family.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I wish it had been Zoom. Like, what would have been like, I wanted to see give the winner a laptop and tell them to get on Zoom together.
Yeah, because that's that. Like we were saying earlier, one of the things you miss out on is that usually everyone's family is there, past competitors are there, and it's really a celebration that you see everyone's reaction. And instead, it's just like a whole bunch of strangers who have been like working in the hotel. And, probably dealing with transportation. And
I like that. Everybody on crew, everyone gather over here. Yep, Steve, you still have to man the camera.
Yeah, exactly.
Who's we're like the two or three people who weren't allowed to be in the group chat.
Yep. Yep. So that, you know, I think like we said before, it loses a little luster and not being able to follow the format exactly the way that previous series have. But yeah, I think, you know, it was really touching to see pictures of Peter when he was 10 years younger, but like seemingly much younger, sitting there with like a cake and being like, I loved this show and it's inspired me to bake and I can't believe like I came here and
I really loved that. Like, I'm going to cry.
Where he was very much really emotional, even though it's Peter. I was like, oh God.
Like, where he, you know, he's like, I can't even believe that I'm here. Like just being here is the biggest dream come true. Like, and I can't believe I won. And how appreciative he is of just the experience itself makes him a really satisfying winner in my eyes, as much as I was rooting for pretty much anyone else but him along the way. I'm very happy for him. I think him winning the season is very lovely.
Yeah.
I'm excited for how many, not necessarily the doors it's going to open for him, but the
he has a really bright future ahead of him.
The number of paths that are now, like, I think it's going to be the number of opportunities he's going to have now, or at least like he's going to feel more that he has more empowerment to make a wider breadth of choices in his life because of this. It's a small distinction, but I'm excited for that for him.
And I think it was so cute that like nobody in his flatmate like group knew that he was in this. I was like, wow,
I didn't know he was on the show. Like,
like I'm impressed. That's like a pretty stealth move. But I thought that I agree. I think he also brings a unique perspective to the table and being so young from the show, being so skilled and talented, but also with the gluten-free bakes that he originally did the first couple of episodes, that will probably set him apart in other ways too, or open up, you know, an even wider niche area of baking that he could potentially contribute to. So I like that a lot. But I also think, you know, this this show historically is a great stepping off point or a launching pad for a lot of people that go on to it. Like, I feel like this probably has opened doors for Ermine, right? You know, it probably makes people like Lottie way more visible and able to do some stuff. That's the cool and unique thing about seeing so many varied personalities and people that have so many strengths within pastry or, you know, baking. All like they'll all
they all have a spot in the landscape of things.
And there's no, you know, there's never anybody who's like a villain per se. So you're not like, oh, what's going to happen with this person? You know, like what's the craziest thing that happened? Like Rowan went and made like waistcoats or something. Yeah. And like Linda's back at the beach drinking champagne. I feel great about both of those updates. So
yeah, Linda, keep on keeping on, babe.
Yeah.
Dave's got his little baby babka now, and I feel I can now freely follow all of these people on Instagram. And I saw that Dave proposed to his girlfriend over the past couple of days.
Oh, nice! That's great.
And so
make an honest woman of her, Dave.
Two things Emily said that this podcast: let the men go to work and make an honest woman out of her. Is this anti-feminist Emily coming out?
No! I didn't come to play, Haley. Feminism all the way. Anti-feminist. Oh, God. No, I think, if anything, no, this is, it's great to see the updates. And baby Ronnie looks very cute.
Just random note. Mac didn't look old enough to me to have a son getting married.
I guess not. I guess I didn't even think about that. Do you think that's why he left? He was like, I got to get back for the wedding. My socially distanced wedding.
that was like the one thing that threw me. It's like, oh, okay.
Yeah. But that's like a fun update to give when like not a lot is happening otherwise. Like, think about it. If someone was like, Emily, what's your 6-month update after being like in anything? I'd be like, still in my apartment. The cats got bigger. And
Emily's been having a hard time keeping her avocado plant alive.
Yeah, exactly. The cats have been peeing the avocado plant, and that's about
it. Related.
Yeah. Such a bleak existence.
Bleak existence, lovely season. I'm glad we were able to cover this together. A nice time it was.
It was a joy, you guys. A real joy.
And I do believe that there's going to be some special holiday episodes coming out. They just kind of do like one episode with 4 different people who are on Bake Off. It's being hosted by Noel Fielding and Tom Allen, who is one of the hosts of Extra Slice, I think it's called, which is the after show. If you're familiar with British comedians, you've probably come across this guy. He's fun. So I'm really looking forward to those because it's like almost like an all-star season. It's really fun. So I can't wait for those. Those should be coming out around the holidays. But yeah, you know, that's what we're doing. I guess, Kurt, what have you been making this week?
I stuffed my first turkey. It went well after I spent probably 20 minutes trying to empty all the different parts out of all the different cavities. It went well. It was pretty traditional. The stuffing came off well. The turkey came out well. The only little hiccup was that with an hour left on the turkey, we added cut up potatoes and sweet potatoes into the roasting pan around the turkey. And then the ones that were further down closer to the base of the pan were nicely cooked through, but the top ones were kind of a little bit tough and solid. So we actually ended up taking the turkey out and then spreading the remaining potatoes evenly across the bottom of the pan and keeping that in the oven for another 15-20 minutes, and it ended up, you know, pretty okay. But yeah, otherwise it's been looking for ways to use the leftovers, and my go-to has been turkey and cheddar on an everything bagel, only using the turkey component. Otherwise it's just eating the stuffing and the potatoes and the turkey, reheating it all. It's been a very very Thanksgiving focused week. Although I did get my first HelloFresh box in like a month and a half or so, and I made a couple of dishes through there. It was a herb mozzarella chicken and a kind of a biscuit chicken pot pie.
Nice.
And I think tonight I'm making a mushu pork dish.
Oh.
So yeah, back to that.
I had a really good cooking week, surprisingly. I've been really off the last few weeks.
Not Thanksgiving. Okay, not maybe Thanksgiving. Remind people that it's not, because Thanksgiving was, is it late October? Mid-October?
Mid-October.
Okay.
What did I make? I made some stuffed shells this week. Stuffed shells. Basically, any chance to eat ricotta cheese, like, I am in on. Cooked up some onions and garlic and mix them in with the cheese and just stuff the shells. For our wedding, for those who came, again, very small wedding, was not a super spreader event. Go me. We didn't have reception, just a ceremony. We gave out jars of tomato sauces because we had it at an Italian hall. So we thought that'd be a great way to support the club. So we gave out tomato sauce. We had a couple jars left. So I used the sauce on the shells. That was delicious. I made a pork tenderloin with a mushroom cream sauce, which was really lovely.
Delish.
That's one of the things my mom actually had made one of the, we did have the Clark family beans and ground beef this week.
Of course.
While I was staying with my mom while my stuff moves cross country. We also, one of the other Clark dishes is the pork, and it's like a mushroom cream slash gravy topping, but like kind of in noodles. So it's almost a little Swedish meatball-y in terms of the consistency. But
my parents would do that a lot when I was growing up. They would use, I can't, please note, my parents didn't grow up with a lot of money. They'd use like a mushroom soup as the sauce on like pork chops or whatever. And so I wanted just a little bit, like I wanted that flavor, but I wanted it to be a little higher. But it was really good. I made my first loaf of bread this week.
Yeah. Ooh. Look at you.
It was pretty easy. The cleanup was not. I'm still scraping dough out of my sink. It was an everything seasoned bread, and I folded some garlic into the loaf itself, topped it with an everything bagel seasoning. It was really tasty.
Nice.
And then my grandmother came over yesterday and we made cookies.
How'd that go?
A direct quote when she saw one of the gingerbreads I made was, "Oh, you really messed that one up, Haley."
Classic grandma quote.
My grandmother is very supportive of me, but she will call me out when I fucked up.
And that's what mine's like, too.
I fucked up those cookies. Only half of them, though. You know what? And this is what Ethan said. Our downstairs smoke detector goes off whenever we make anything. He was like, "Well, Haley, the upstairs smoke detector also went off. That's when you should have known that you should have taken it out of the oven."
Is that how you time your food when the downstairs one goes off? That's just done. The top one goes off. It's been in too long.
Yeah.
Like my mistake was, I put two sheets in on the top rack and one sheet in on the bottom rack, not really realizing I should have taken the bottom rack ones out because they were cooking faster.
Yeah.
I have a tendency to be like, I am following the recipe. You are in there for 10 minutes, no matter what.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a classic, misstep for most people, though. Like, ovens vary between kitchens, between anywhere. Like, it's always going to be like this crazy back and forth of like checking stuff. So I think that happens a lot. It also happens when you're having a recipe or you're putting stuff into smaller containers versus bigger containers. Like we saw it on Bake Off like 2 weeks ago where they were like, you overbaked this because it was smaller in size, so it cooked faster, right?
Yeah.
Classic
or
move.
When you have a recipe that my grandmother says, this was my grandmother's, and and it's like handwritten with like no real instructions.
Yeah.
At one point I was supposed to add vinegar into molasses and mix that and then add it into, or maybe it was like add the baking soda into the molasses, mix it and then put it in. And I just put the molasses in, put the baking soda in. And like, that's not what I was supposed to do.
Yeah.
And then I was confused about how much flour to add because my grandma was like, no, it's like add up to 5 cups of flour. And then I had a really wet dough that I couldn't shape. Oh. So I had to add like so much more flour. Yeah. Then I had to like scrape the counter after. So I feel like next time it would go better.
It's tough. I think it depends on what you're making, but baking stuff is so specific and really, relies on your intuition if you know the recipe really, really well. Like, I remember when I was probably in college, I called and asked my dad, who's like an epic apple pie maker. Like, he just makes apple pie all the time because my mom used to make it. And then she was like, Dave, you're asking too much. You need to learn how to do this yourself. So he started making apple pie from like the pre-made crusts from, like, you know, Pillsbury. But he would always cut up the apples and do the sugar and everything like that. And I called him once and I was like, Dad, how do you make your apple pie? I want to try to make it. And he was like, well, I use that huge spoon we have in the drawer. And I just level that off a couple of times with sugar. And I'm like, so unhelpful. And like an hour later, he called back and he's like, all right, so I eyeballed it, but I put it into a measuring cup so I could give you a more precise, you know, measurement. I was like, thank you. That's what people need, is like some level of guidance that's more than like, use the old spoon you've had in the family for six generations. Like, not helpful. So yeah, I think it's a learning curve with a lot of this stuff, unless it's like a very precise, you know, weighing of ingredients and being like, mix these things first, do this next, put it in the middle of the oven because it bakes a certain way that way. But even then, maybe your oven leans a little bit, like it's way hotter in the back of my oven, which actually makes a lot of sense when you think about it. So I have to turn trays halfway through. That's just what I've learned to do. But that's because I do stuff all the time. Yeah. So it's like, it's totally based on like your experience with things.
Yeah. So that was fine. I also made a, what we call a, I think it's a Chinese noodle cookie. You use like lo mein noodles. You double boil a half a bag of butterscotch chips with half a bag of dark chocolate chips.
Oh, it's like a nest?
Kind of. And then you like, you know, melt that. And then you throw a cup and a half of the noodles in and a cup and a half of peanuts in, or any kind of nut you want. My grandmother actually uses cranberry. These you dump the, it into the chocolate.
These are the short, these are like the short 2-3 inch long crispy noodles, right?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I was picturing like ramen noodles.
Sort of. So
like
was I. Okay. I was like, and then you twirl it into a nest and put like the things in the center to melt in.
I've had those before.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And then you just put them on. I'll send you a picture later.
Yeah.
And my sister-in-law made a couple things and I kept being like, sorry, I only made two things. And she's like, you have the more complicated things to make. So, so we'll see. Sorry to my family if all the baking shit, it's literally all of my fault.
Oh, stop.
Well, you know, it's one of those things I'm just learning along the way, because I'm not a great baker. I'm not really good at following instructions.
Someday we're going to bake together.
I can't wait for that.
I don't know when it's going to happen, but someday, if nothing else, maybe we do like a FaceTime or two where I'm like, okay, now do this.
Like, I've been dreaming of for so long of you and Josh coming to visit us, and we just go to wineries and then we bake in the afternoon and
stop it. That's all I'll ever do.
Yeah.
Oh, I miss interactions with people. That was a fun time. All right. Should I tell you what I made?
Yeah.
So Thanksgiving.
Of course.
I have been advocating for a turkeyless Thanksgiving for most of my adult life and never been successful. And boy, leave it to coronavirus to really give me what I want. So I decided that, A, we're not doing turkey because I can't be bothered. And also, it's just Josh and I. We're doing like sort of a pretty serious quarantine in order to see my parents at the end of this week. We wanted to make sure there was plenty of time and it wasn't sort of timed with everybody else in the Thanksgiving rush. So I opted to make a meal that was probably not going to be very Thanksgiving-ish, because I know we're going to get to my parents and my mom's going to want to make the traditional family stuffing that we've had in our family, that she's going to want to make all these other things. So I was like, I think I want to make fried chicken, because why wouldn't I make fried chicken?
Of course, of course, of course.
So, and like, that's an easy thing to get. I don't have to worry about like ordering it ahead of time. I just go in, pick up the things I wanted. I got an extra slat of 3 bone-in thighs because I was like, one chicken's simply not enough for 2 people. But I also had to butcher it myself. And I was like, well, what happens if I like botch the butchering a little bit? And then I'm like, here's the thigh you like so much. And it's like this tiny little thing. So I was like, I'll buy 3 thighs on the side as well. And I made biscuits to go with it. We did a buttermilk brine with the chicken itself. And then I made like an apple sort of radicchio slaw on the side, because I was like, anything to kind of like cut through the richness of this. And then with my duck egg foray, I decided to make a pecan pie for the first time, because I've literally never had it. So I was like, okay, this is what I'm going to do. And I used the tartine book for it. And usually it calls for bourbon, maple syrup, and kumquats on the top. But I was like, I'm never going to find a kumquat around here. So I just did some orange zest in the mix instead. And then duck eggs. And let me tell you, that thing, what like an unbelievable recipe it is. But I have a little tub of creme fraiche, and then I put Maldon sea salt on top. Ooh. And I'm just telling you, like, that dollop of creme fraiche and the sea salt, just, it sings in your mouth. And if nobody's, if I can impart any wisdom to anybody about a pecan pie, the first one I've ever had in my life, first one I've ever baked in my life, it is that you should put creme fraiche and Maldon sea salt on top of it before you eat it. And that's all I have to say.
Well, keep that in mind, because I don't think I've ever had pecan pie. I don't think it's as popular here as it is in the States.
did I also see fried chicken and waffles in terms of leftovers?
Yes. So I have been making waffles every once in a while with the discard I have from my sourdough, just because that became such a popular thing. So I tried my hand at it, and I've been making waffles every once in a while, and I just freeze them. You let them cool to room temp.
Oh, good idea.
Freeze them, then you just have them, pull them out, throw them in the oven for a few minutes.
Yeah, works for Eggos, it works for you.
Exactly. So I had a big square of those that I put to the side, and Josh just took out some cold chicken and put it on there for breakfast yesterday. And then last night we had like one huge breast left, and we're like, what are we going to do with this? We're like up to our eyeballs in fried chicken. And so I made like a stewed green with like greens with like ham, a little maple syrup and apple cider vinegar. And then I had a bag of grits that I've been slowly working my way through. So I made like Monterey Jack grits, because that's all the cheese I had. And that was just unreal. So we did like sort of like a Southern style dinner last night to kind of finish off the leftovers. So, you know, it's some heavy eating. I think we might go on like a vegetable diet the next like 4 or 5 days before we go back to my parents and have them be like, look, we made this like really rich dinner again. But I think it was a pretty successful Thanksgiving, just the two of us, and nice to not have to go anywhere or like rush around or worry about killing anybody through contact, and social undistancing. So, you know, all in all, it was a weird Thanksgiving, but honestly, like kind of the least stressful Thanksgiving we've had in a long time, because we just got to do whatever we wanted to do, which was great.
Nice. I forgot to get dessert wise. We picked up a couple pies from a local pie place, Grand Traverse Pie Company, and we got a sweet potato pie, which is tasty, and their cherry berry pie, which was cherries and raspberries. Mm-hmm. Both were tasty. So if anybody has access to Grand Traverse, I highly recommend their pies.
All right.
Did not make any of them. But I did eat them.
Yeah. I love pie. Pie's so good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway.
Thank you everyone for joining us for God, a wonderful season.
Yeah.
I'm not even sure if anyone has been listening to this, but it's just been nice for us to do this. Thank you for the 7 of you who have been with us all along.
Guys, thank you so much.
Emily, where can people find you?
So I am on Twitter and Instagram as Emlet, like an omelet, but with an E. And I'm going to keep doing the post-show recaps, Patreon offerings with Josh. So check that out. If you want to become a patron, I'd say it's worth your while. We live streamed Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory on Thanksgiving, which was super fun. Very hilarious to do. I drank a decent amount of wine while we did it. So my comments got more and more terse and hilarious towards the end. We're doing fun things over there. So I highly recommend you guys checking it out. Otherwise, you can interact with me on Twitter or Instagram.
Kurt?
I am at Kurt Clark with 2 C's on most of your social media platforms. So hit me up.
You can check out my recaps of The Bachelorette here on the Wrap Ups Network. Keeping on with that. Other than that, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at @isstrong_. You can check out my blog, strongtakes.ca. Until next time, pack your stand mixers and head on out. Bye.
Bye.